Hey everyone, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, our blog, and our newsletter and YouTube channel, and our great sponsors, Your Dolce Vita, Italy Rooting, and Abitivo Casa. And today I have a great guest who happens to be a distant cousin of my wife through her Puerto Rican roots, Valerie Evans. So welcome, Valerie. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Bob. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. So, I mean, what's really interesting is, like my wife, you are half Italian and half Puerto Rican, but the reverse. In her case, her dad was Puerto Rican and her mom was Sicilian. And you both grew up probably less than 20 blocks from each other from New York City.
Isn't that incredible? Such a small world. I find the more I do genealogy and DNA research, the more I'm amazed at how small the world is and how much we have in common with each other, no matter where we were raised or our backgrounds. It's amazing. So yeah, I grew up in East Harlem. And my mother was from Ponce, Puerto Rico. She passed away in 2019. And my father was a big question mark for a long time. I understood he was Southern Italian. So I was thinking, I was under the impression I was also Sicilian. But it turns out he was from, on his mom's side, a small town in Southern Italy called San Nicandro di Bari, in Bari. And on his father's side, he's from Salerno. And it's been an interesting journey learning about who my father was, and my Italian side. And I then also researched my Puerto Rican side. And so I discovered I'm related to your wife, and, I'm here to share my story because I feel like we as a society don't talk about that side of things so much when you have an unknown parent.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it okay to ask you what happened now with your father?
Sure. So, like I mentioned, I grew up in East Harlem, and my mother had moved from Puerto Rico to East Harlem, back in the 60s, and she was the first person in her family to do so. She came completely alone, and then brought over her siblings and so forth. And she was in a really kind of tragic accident. She was struck by a drunk driver, and as part of her recovery, you know, she was kind of homebound for a very long time. And I feel like, even though she was in her 30s, you know, she was she was from the country, a rural Puerto Rican young woman, didn't really know, you know, kind of America in the 70s, New York in the 1970s. And East Harlem, you know, no matter it's the 70s or 2024, it's rough neighborhood, right? It used to be the biggest Little Italy in the States at one time. And so I feel like she was maybe a little naive. And she, from what the story she told me, was she fell in love with this guy who, you know, was really well-dressed, smelled amazing, really just treated her well. It turned out he was married.
Wow.
And, you know, he gave her the story that you often hear, the wife is sick, you know, and, you know, just he's in love with my mom. And I guess they were involved for a while, and then she became pregnant. And that's where they kind of, you know, butted heads, because 1970s, very different climate than we're in right now. And so, you know, he wanted her to terminate the pregnancy. My mom was a good little Catholic girl from Puerto Rico, who didn't have that same perspective. And so she decided to keep me. And she told me that was basically the end of it. However, you know, a lot of people in the neighborhood seem to know my father. But because of the Italian, I would say Italian American culture, I know it goes back, it stems back from Italy. There's kind of like a culture of silence. You don't talk about people's secrets or what they're doing. You kind of mind your business. And so even though people knew my father, you know, they would tell me, you are the spitting image of your father. It's like if someone put a wig on your father's face, but they wouldn't tell me about my father. So for,
So you were still on, you were still in the neighborhood. I mean, this was
I grew
before.
up in the neighborhood. People
Wow.
knew me as Vito's daughter. Vito's daughter, spitting image of him. But, and this is what I was going to say, I never met the man. I didn't actually know his last name because when you're growing up in that sort of environment, even on the Puerto Rican side, you know each other by your nickname, you know? And it's again, the similarities between the cultures is amazing. I knew him as Vito. I had no information whatsoever other than that, you know, I knew he was older than my mom. I knew the age range. I had an idea of what he did for a living. I knew his first name and that he was possibly from southern Italy and that he was from the neighborhood originally. And so for most of my life, you know, going on those leads, it was basically impossible to find Vito in a sea of Vitos in Little Italy, right?
But your mom, she knew his last name, right? Didn't she?
So that's the thing. She thought she knew his last name. She even told me, you know, more recently. Before she was passing, when I kind of was able to find more information, I even asked her, like, how did you, like, why did you think his surname was, you know, what he said? Like, did you just go on what he told you? And she said, no, I saw his ID. Now, my mom had dementia at the time. So you kind of have to take, you know, a little grain of salt with some of the things. But the interesting thing about memory loss is that you tend to remember things that happened a long time ago better than you do more recent, right? So I kind of, as now that I'm older, now that I'm married and, you know, I'm a mom myself, I feel like I have kind of a better understanding. I was angry for a long time because I didn't have the details and I kind of, you know, I was angry at her. But now that I'm much older and I've listened to so many stories and, you know, the plight of so many people, I see that I think she may have protected me in many ways. And then also, I think she was also taken advantage a little bit as well. So she didn't, you know, she thought she knew his last name. It turns out that was not the man's last name. So either he had a fake ID, he was using an alias. You know, there are many things we can speculate on. And sadly, that's the piece that I'm still kind of struggling with, that I don't know the full story. I don't have all of the facts. I've always been driven by kind of like, I want to know him. I want to know what kind of person he was. I would, you know, for a long time, I didn't know what he looked like. And so I wanted to see him and see my paternal family. And then the other piece was like, what actually happened between them? Did he know about me? Did they have a falling out? And he said, you know, you go your way if you choose to do that. And I don't ever want to have anything to do with you. Or did he know about me? Did he ever, you know, drive by the neighborhood and sort of see how we were doing or think about me? And by the time I was able to find out who he was, He was in a nursing home up in the Bronx, and I understand he might have been sort of, also suffering from dementia and sick. And so within several months of actually discovering with a lot of help who he was, he actually passed away as well. So I never got the chance to meet him.
Yeah, that's so sad. So sad. So how did you find them?
So it's a long journey, right? Because essentially my whole life I've been looking for this man. And when I got into kind of my professional career, I started working a lot in sort of technology and digital and, blogging and doing websites. So at one point I was thinking I'm going to set up a website like Help Me Find Vito, right? And kind of like help, crowdsource information because I had tried talking to friends who were lawyers. I had tried actually going around the neighborhood asking some of the old timers, like, do you know Vito? like, do you know? And they were like, who are you? Why are you asking so many questions, kid? Right? And so I went through all of these phases trying to, get more information. And so finally, I think around 12 years ago, 10 years ago, whenever 23andMe actually became available, the very first thing I did was take a DNA test. And at the time, I got my results and I was flooded with relatives. And I was still under the impression that, his last name was something else. So I didn't really get anywhere with that test. And so I put it aside. I kept thinking about it. I kept feeling this like urge, this hole, this something's missing. I really have to find out what's happening. And so about 6 years ago, I read an article. I don't remember where I read the article, but it was about this group called DNA Detectives that is dedicated to helping people like me, mostly a lot of adopted folks, but also a lot of people with unknown parentage find the identity of their biological parent or a lost relative. And their group is actually associated or run by a very famous genetic genealogist whose name is Cece Moore. And nowadays you see her on the news all the time. She helps solve crimes and identify people by DNA. And so I happened to look it up on Facebook. It's a huge group. And they have instructions on like how to get started, what to do, right? And so I had joined Ancestry 20 years ago, kind of plotting, my mom's line because my mom has a huge family, like a lot of us in Puerto Rico tend to do, right? Like everybody's your cousin, which is what we were just started talking about. I wasn't, I wasn't missing any family on my Puerto Rican side, but I thought it was interesting because when you come from Puerto Rico, you tend to have a very diverse ethnic background. So, the official story is that you're one third Spanish from Spain, you're one third African from the whole institution of slavery. And then you're one third indigenous from the Taíno people who lived originally on Puerto Rico and across the Caribbean. So I took it as like fact that I was one third, like I was a basically mixed race, even though you look at me and everybody's like, oh, you're Italian, right?
Yeah.
Puerto Ricans will tell me all the time, like, I would have never thought you were Puerto Rican. And it's funny because I grew up in a Puerto Rican family in a Puerto Rican neighborhood. At that time, it switched over. So I started doing the research. I had joined Ancestry. I took the instructions to heart from DNA detectives and I tested my mom as the next step. And I started exporting my results and putting them in all of these different databases. And little, I mean, like little by little, I started compiling one or two, it's like people who had Italian backgrounds, not just Puerto Rican backgrounds. And my results were flooded. I think I had something insane, like 130,000 relatives with Puerto Rican backgrounds. So at the time, I was a very new mom. So I spent a lot of time rocking chair, nursing my son, putting him to sleep. And what I would do as he was falling asleep is I would take out my phone, and every day for 30 minutes or so, or an hour, I would organize and sort my DNA matches. These look Puerto Rican, these look Italian. It was like, I was just going on kind of like, you know, profiles and last names and towns and things like that. Just little clues. Still had no idea who Vito was. You know, I still was under the impression that he might have been Sicilian, didn't have his last name, was totally thrown off by the last name he told my mom. And so fast forward about a year or so later, I got a match that was, and I'm kind of skipping a part, but I did have one kind of informational clue that gave me an idea. A man who had known my father's brother gave me a lead. And he said, you know, your father had a brother named Joey. You know, and I used to hang out with him. He grew up on 121st Street. And I was like, okay. So I had taken note of that. So I was like, okay, so Vito's got a brother named Joey. We know that Joey could possibly be Joseph. And so, you know, I kind of kept that in the back of my head. And at one point, I found a match and I traced it to a Vito and Joey, and I called up, you know, I got in touch with the person who put the tree together. They put me in touch with somebody else. I actually called the man's daughter and spoke to her. This is like, you know, terrible mistake. Like, this is when you get super excited and you think you found something. And so we talked. She was actually really nice. I keep in touch with those folks. And it turns out that we are related, except it's not the right Vito and Joey. It's actually a different set of Vito and Joeys in my tree. So it was heartbreaking for me because the relative, the distant cousin, had sent me pictures of the family and this Vito when he was little. His name was Vito Novielli. She sent me a beautiful black and white picture. And that Vito Novielli is related to me. And so I could actually see my face and my son's face in that photo. And I fell in love with that story. And that Vito had passed away, right? So fast forward, turns out that wasn't Vito, because I got this match. And this match was a second cousin. And this match had a totally different last name that I wasn't familiar with at all. And then almost like a month later, 2 months later, I remember it was right around Thanksgiving, I got another match with the same last name. This was a first cousin. So one match was on 23andMe. The other match was on Ancestry. The first match, which was a second cousin, turned out to be related to the first cousin. That was his uncle. And the guy was, you know, young man, kind of college aged. And we started talking, and he started telling me that, you know, he was looking for information about his grandmother. The grandfather was a mystery. And we just started exchanging information. And then I reached out to the first cousin and he kind of ignored me. So I persisted and I hit him up on Facebook. I hit him up on Instagram. I was just kind of like, I will not be ignored. Somebody's got to tell me more. And I was just kind of like, there's something to this. And so I had found this woman who is what they call a search angel on DNA detectives. So search angels, God bless them, are volunteers who are professional researchers, genetic genealogists, who offer their services to people that are looking for help in that group. And they will basically overnight solve the mystery of their unknown parents or whoever they're looking for. And so I knew there was a person who kind of focused on Italian genealogy. And I went to her and I said, I've been sorting my matches for a year. And like all of a sudden, I thought I had it figured out. Turns out it's not this branch, because out of nowhere, these two cousins popped up and their names are completely new to me. They don't match anything. And like, I did something wrong here. So within a couple of days, she was able to find out who my father was. So it turns out that the young man and his uncle are related to my aunt. And my aunt is one of a number of kids. I can't remember if it's like 8 children. And there were 3 brothers and maybe 5 sisters. And so one of them was Vito. One of them was Anthony Joseph. And over time, I've been able to trace, like through the DNA matches, through the tree, my relationship to that family. And at first, when she told me, I had a really hard time accepting it because I had fallen in love with the other Vito and his picture and his whole tree, and they had accepted me and I had talked to them. This time around, I never talked to the first cousin. I only texted or sent messages with him. And he seemed nice enough, but wasn't really very forthcoming. Didn't really tell me much, sent me a few pictures. And then like a year later, I got another match who also turned out to be a first cousin. And I think she may have misinterpreted some of our communication, because she sent me an amazing bundle of photographs and information, and then later realized that I had never actually met my father. So wow. I think she was kind of under the impression that I was known and they knew about me. So I think she kind of retracted a little bit when she realized that I hadn't been like accepted. And then at one point I wrote Vito a letter, not knowing that he was in a nursing home. He wasn't home, and didn't hear back. I waited a few months. And so I don't remember, I may have written another letter, or I ended up trying to reach out to what I found online, his daughter, which incredibly, also looked a lot like me. And so I had a hard time accepting it, but my search angel, and incredibly her name is Dawn. She's a beautiful person. She kept calling me and checking in on me and saying, like, you know, no, this is it. I'm really good at what I do. You know, like, we do this. You know, it might take a while for you to digest, but it might also take a while for them. They had no idea about you. And so kind of talking to her helped a lot. And I ended up calling his daughter eventually, which I felt like, you know, kind of putting the shoe on the other foot was a horrific thing to do to somebody, kind of pick up the phone and say like, oh, hi, I'm, you know, the
I'm your
sister
sister.
you never knew about because your father was stepping out on your family. But I also felt like I struggled with it for a long time, but I also felt like in this life, if you don't take the chance, if you don't take the risk or kind of go for what you want and what you need, you'll end up, you know, on your deathbed with a bunch of regrets.
Yeah. Well, you know, this, the same thing happened to my, my cousin. And she found the half sister the same way. I had been contacted by her first, and I said, well, you know, she was on 23, and I said, try Ancestry because there's a lot more people in Ancestry. And I knew she was a second cousin, and it's, you know, going through my mind like, whose daughter is she? And so she did it, and it just so happened that my cousin Larry, all three of his children had done Ancestry. So as soon as it popped up, I contacted my cousin and I said, did you see? And she said, I saw. But, you know, they contacted each other very quickly. And, you know, my cousin was shocked. You know, Donna was shocked. But, you know, she said, you know, it wasn't her fault, you know. And I don't know how much they talked, but I know, I'm pretty sure that they met. And, you know, and I asked her, did you know anything? And she said the only thing she remembered when she was maybe like 4 years old was her mother crying in the bedroom for like 2 weeks. So it somehow came out, you know. But now, so now did your sister, she was in the neighborhood, yeah, when you were growing up?
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
She wasn't in the neighborhood because the family had moved out from the neighborhood, and I guess he used to still drive back to kind of visit his friends and, you know, kind of hang out or do business. I don't know what was going on that side of things. But when I was a very young child, like elementary school age, there were still plenty of Italians around and had Italian businesses. So, you know, my sister, who's from my older sister's from a separate relationship, you know, we used to go to every Sunday to the Italian bakery. Like, I have some Italian kind of heritage because I grew up in an Italian neighborhood, but I never really felt Italian because that whole piece was missing. I felt very Puerto Rican, which is kind of ironic because when I've you know, now I've been to many places. I was in Munich in Germany, and somebody said, oh, you're Italian, you're like the what is it, architect, like if somebody drew an Italian girl, like this is what they would draw. And I thought that was so funny because I was missing my whole Italian, you know, heritage. So I find it really interesting, and I've been driven by kind of reclaiming that information and then also diving into my mom's side as well to kind of reclaim some of that information that has been lost. You know, there was a big fire in the church in Ponce, and all of the records that they kept, and the Spaniards kept excellent records.
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm.
They were completely lost. But I also later on was able to hire in locally a genealogist who helped me trace my mother's line all the way back to like the 1300s. And so what I find really interesting, and I want to write a book about this one day, I know you're the guy to talk to, is that the reason a lot of us are so related, you know, distantly related, is that we all stem from the same group of people, the founding folks who came over and set up shop in Puerto Rico. We all, you know, stemmed from that, from those branches. And so very distantly, were related through that lineage. And so he traced my roots to Christopher Columbus, the founding governors, even as far back as the founding conquistadores of the Canary Islands, right?
Yeah.
And so as an Italian American, being able to say that I have some connection to Christopher Columbus, but it's through my Puerto Rican side, is like mind blowing.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, it's funny you mention that, because I traced Marion back to the first governor. I don't remember his name now, but I traced her back as a, you know, descendant of the first governor, and back to Spain and all of that. And her father was actually born in the Dominican Republic, because mm-hmm. her grandfather had coffee and sugar plantations in Dominican Republic and in Puerto Rico. So he obviously had some money, but he also, he liked women a lot, her grandfather. He had three separate families. Her father was from the second family. Then she actually has aunts that are younger than her through her grandfather. And he lived a very long time. She said that every Sunday, her grandfather in Puerto Rico would dress up and go visit his second wife, her grandmother, in Mayagüez, because that's where they lived. And, you know, same thing, incredible. And like you said, she's got, I don't know, boy, she's got like 10 or 12 different nationalities in the mix, mostly from the Puerto Rican side. And, I think every Puerto Rican has done Ancestry.com. Italians don't do it, but Puerto Ricans, for some reason, all do Ancestry.
And I'm hoping that changes, because I saw some of the Ancestry folks, interestingly enough, it was on LinkedIn, I saw them talk about how they're now offering kits in like 23 different countries, including Italy. And what's interesting about, I find like my search is that I had, like, technology was such a tool for me to connect with people. So for our anniversary next year, my husband and I are planning to go for a family trip back to San Nicandro, the Bay.
Yeah.
I have found living relatives through my grandmother, who I'd never met. I have been able to get in contact with people back in the little tiny village that time forgot. And I have also we met through this journey. I met someone incredible who's been documenting and digitizing the records from that town for most of his life. And so he has a website. It's called bodyancestors.com. And so because of that website, I was able to fill out my entire tree on my paternal grandmother's side back to maybe the 1500s. I can't remember how far back, but like eighth great grandmother, basically. And it's all thanks to that man's work, and he's put it all online for free. And so I met him. I met some other researchers helping him. I had people help me find some of those great grandparents. And it's just been incredible how generous people are. And so even though kind of going back to talking to my half sister and that, Vito's children, even though I guess they haven't found it in their hearts to accept me or embrace me as part of their history, I have found this incredible community online that has helped me find the information I needed regardless. And so I was able to see my father's face. I was able to even find a photo of my grandmother and her mother online. I have been able to, every time I get a new Italian match, if it's above like 20, centigrams, I can't remember what centimeters, I can't remember what the CMs,
Yeah, Center
centimorgans,
Morgans, I think it is.
centimorgans, yeah, it's like, it's not
Okay.
centigrams, that's another measurement. if it's above a certain amount, even if it's a tiny amount, most of the time I am able to figure out where on my tree they belong and figure out the connection. And what I've been doing is that I have my profiles online. Anyone who emails me, anyone who is looking for information, I share what I have. I always respond to people because I want to pay it forward. And so that's kind of why I'm mentioning that if you're in a situation like I was, it's online. Like the technology, AI, it's getting to the point where there's not going to be any more secrets. And I mean, 1970s was sounded like a really fun time for the folks back then.
It was when you were 19, I'll tell you that.
Yes, and so I feel like it's time to shed sort of the stigma around, sort of this unknown. It happens, right? And it's more common than you would think. And so I think it's kind of time to move behind the shame. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to come to you and share this story.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate it. And so how did your mom cope? I mean, how did she, she obviously raised a fine, upstanding daughter. So, I mean, how did she,
Thank you. That's very kind. I feel like, thinking about being a mother now and thinking a lot about her now that she's no longer with us. I think she was a very strong person, like internal fortitude. I think she suffered a lot because her life was very tragic, right? So she got hit by that car. She was devastated. She had a lot of medical issues for the rest of her life. And then, of course, there's the heartbreak that comes from falling in love with someone who doesn't want to be with you. And so, we were poor. We grew up in what became Spanish Harlem during the 1980s crack era. And she protected me. I was kind of like her apple of her eye, little girl. And so even though I grew up in a really rough neighborhood, I'm always kind of proud of those of us that made it out of the neighborhood, because to be able to raise and nurture, a child in that environment isn't an easy thing to do. And so even though, her life didn't turn out maybe the way she wanted, I am very proud of the fact that she raised me in a way that enabled me to succeed. And so as a mom, I see the beauty in that, you know, and it's something I definitely want to carry forward. And I also think about these ancestors, you know, what it might have been like for my grandmother, who was 19 when she came from Bali, right? And I've researched the journey. And so I understand that many folks walked from their village. You know, if they were lucky enough to have like a mule or donkey, like they were able to put their bags or, you know, and make that voyage. But a lot of them walked to the port in Naples. And then it was a 2-day trip in not great conditions. And, you know, and then they got here. And I can't imagine moving to another country, you know, after a journey like that and not knowing anything, you know? And so I think about that fortitude. And I see it, my mom came by plane, but it was the same experience, right? Like, she didn't have anyone here in New York City when she came here.
Yeah. So why did, two questions, why did she come? And then, you know, what did she do? You know, what kind of job did she have?
My mom?
Yeah.
Or my grandma. Yeah. So my mom came because, you know, in Puerto Rico, she was also growing up poor. And so there wasn't work, right? Like there wasn't any work. Like the opportunities were in the mainland, in New York. And so you have this huge community of Puerto Ricans in New York City. And so she came here because she wanted more than, you know, kind of the peasant, rural experience that she was having in Puerto Rico. And there were so many opportunities here, you know. And so she came and she had some work lined up as a domestic worker, but that didn't work out. And then she ended up working in a bakery, which is really interesting because my grandfather, who on the Puerto Rican side, my father's father, was a baker. And in fact, if you go up to the Bronx and Rye, New York, that area up there, my father's last name, like there's a bunch of bakeries with that name. And so one of my research projects is trying to see if there's actually some connection with that last name. Is it just so happened that, you know, all the bakers in Italy come from this family? I don't know. But it's really interesting. Like I said, there's so many parallels. And so that is something that I've been exploring in terms of like, there's something here that I want to share with the world about these parallels and these experiences from both sides. Like I was saying, it just makes me feel like we're so much closer to each other than we actually think.
Well, yeah, no, that's for sure. And also, you know, one other thing that I've said before is that my children are adopted and my son is fifth to eighth cousin of my wife. You know, his father was Puerto Rican. His father was born in Puerto Rico. So, yeah, so it's like, I think part of the reason, you know, in Italy, they don't do ancestry there because they're in the, you know, up until recently, they've all been in the same town for 300, 400, 500 years. So, you know, the family tree is in the cemetery. They just have to go there and look and everybody's there. And I asked them what that, in fact, we got a tour from somebody in Molise, who's an expert on the Samnite people. And I asked him, how long has your family been here? He's like, 500 years. You know, he said, this is my heritage is the Samnite. I could go back to these people from, you know, who fought the Romans. So I think that's, you know, that's part of it. It's just, they don't need to research because they kind of know everything. And unlike when our families came here, where they didn't talk that much about Italy, they seem to talk about it all the time over there, you know? So it's you know, completely different culture in that respect, I think. But like I said, Marion's Puerto Rican roots, I was able to get back to, I think, 1300 or something like that. And most of, well, not all of them, but most of them that can trace back to the first governor have some sort of noble roots back in Spain, because if you were the governor in Puerto Rico in whatever it was, 1500, the roots go to go way, way back to those noble families.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing too is, like you said, with the Dominican Republic and everything. So in the Caribbean, these founding families, they often moved around from, they had a property, and kind of set up towns and governance all over the Caribbean, sometimes even into Venezuela or some of the other areas that
Mexico,
were,
Mexico.
being
Yeah.
colonized. And so that is also mind-blowing, because like I said, I had this very kind of like basic idea, like one third this, one third that, Puerto Rico, they came straight over. And it made me realize how narrow kind of like my mindset had been, and how that history is so much richer, because it wasn't, A to B. It wasn't like that specific, that narrow.
Well, and the Spanish were everywhere. I'm a direct from Hernando Cortez, because he's connected with the Pignatelli family in Italy. In fact, there's a museum in Naples, the Pignatelli Cortez Museum. And so, it does, and it, well, it goes back 400 years. I mean, I guess in the scheme of things, that's not that far, but I think that's what people don't realize too. Like you were saying, the Spanish had the footprint in the Americas and South America, North America, Central America, all those Caribbean islands, and Italy. They ruled Italy for 300 years. So,
And so
and when I was researching my family, the one of my cousins that I found, the Piramalo family, they came from Spain originally in 1500 or thereabouts. And she thought she was going to find people in South America and Spain. She never expected to find anybody in America, because it just didn't dawn on her, that they would be in America.
It's fascinating. I feel like in researching my mom's tree, I have found a lot of interesting information as well. Right around the time I really started deep diving into her ancestry, and I'm so glad I was able to convince her to take the DNA test before she passed. I came across another researcher who's been doing DNA research on the indigenous folks of the Caribbean, so ancient DNA research. And through GED Match, which isn't as popular as it was a few years ago, that specimen, one of the specimens that the researchers were using, was from what is now the Bahamas. And so in the Bahamas, in the caves, they have found Taino. They're called Lucayan Taino. And so these are indigenous people whose remains were found in the caves. And my mom and I matched these remains that are, thousands, I don't know how old. And it was incredible to actually find proof of that relationship. And like I said earlier, not in Puerto Rico, but in the Bahamas. And so it's really given me a lot of things to think about in terms of like how our people have moved around. And so how what we think of nation and states and borders, you know, it's like it makes sense right now, but in the long view of time, it's completely irrelevant.
Yeah. Try My True Ancestry. I think you could send it there for free, and then you could, you know. But they, what they do is they go to archaeological digs, and then they match you to those different places. So you might get some interesting stuff from, you know, Italy, and then also from, you know, from the Taino, you know, population, because they pretty much do this from all over the world. And it doesn't say that you're related to any of these people, but it kind of gives you a sense of where they were. And then they also do, if you don't have it, you probably do, but if you don't, they also do the haplogroups for the mother line and father line, which is pretty interesting for anybody who cares to know that stuff. And I was amazed because my mother line, you would only have one. You would only have the mother line. But my mother line is almost 95% from the Caucasus, even though, as far back as I know, they were in Italy.
Yeah.
So it's very, you know, that blew me away when I saw that. I was like, how could this possibly be? But, you know, that's what it is. It is what it is, I suppose. So now I know you have a website, and I think you also have an Instagram where you put some of your stuff out there, right? So if people want to look into that, where would they go?
Yeah, so a lot of my social media accounts are under Literanista, which is what I used to blog under way, way back. So I've been blogging for about 2 decades. Lots of talking about these topics. My degree is in anthropology, and I love reading and researching and writing. And so you'll find me on social media under Literanista. My website is now valeriemevans.com. And when I started doing this research, like I mentioned, I thought it would be interesting to do a curation of Italian American photographs and stories. And so I have that under Instagram, Italian at a Glance. And so it's all about kind of discovering, you know, my own Italian American heritage history, but also making those stories more available to the world.
Yeah, and that's, you know, not dissimilar to what I do. I'm going to have to check, because there may be a few people I want to talk to, and I send you some of my stuff too.
Yeah, let's do this.
so we could go back and forth on that. And you mentioned BarriAncestry.com. Who runs that? Because I never heard of that site before.
So his name is John Ruggerio, and he is just the fellow that has been researching and had all of these records that, you know, he was putting into his computer and creating a database of everyone in town. And at one point he decided, well, I have basically the whole town mapped out for generations. Let me put it online. And so that's his passion project. And he has thousands of records on this website that are all basically like you can look up an individual and find their marriage records, their civic records, all have been digitized and are available on that website. And so if you have family in those little villages, those little communes outside of Bari, you should definitely take a look at BarriAncestors.com, because I can guarantee you it's a treasure trove.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to look, because my mom's family is from Torito, you know, just 30 minutes outside of Bari. And we went there last year. So when you go, I know a really, really good restaurant in Bari in the old town.
I'll need all the recommendations.
I'll let you know where it is. And then if you go to Torito, there's a really, really good place there. Yeah, we stayed in the old town in Bari, and that was quite an experience. It took us 3 days to figure out the best way to get back to our apartment, because it's nuts. You know, there's no street signs or anything like that. The little things usually they, you know, in Italy, they write the sign, everything's on the building. So you have to kind of try and get used to that. But we finally figured the quickest way back, time-wise, not mile-wise or you know, was to walk along the water. And then we were able to find our apartment pretty quick. But that was certainly an adventure for sure. And one last question before we go. Now, have you been to Ponce? Have you been to Puerto Rico?
So incredibly enough, I've traveled all over the world, all over the Caribbean. I have not been to Puerto Rico
and
I have not been to Italy. So I keep kind of nagging my husband about that. Like, we have to do something about this, especially with my son. I want him to kind of, you know, have that worldly experience. Because I lived in a, you know, I didn't leave Harlem until I was an adult. And I was a underprivileged kid. And so I feel like, you know, the world is huge, right? We're talking about the world is small. The world is also a really big, interesting place. And so I want to travel everywhere I can, including those hometowns, those ancestral hometowns.
Yeah. My wife's sister, she lives in Añasco, which is right outside of Aguadilla. And it's Aguadilla actually has one of the largest runways in the world because they used to fly B-52s into there or something like that. So it's got this two big, huge runways that don't get used anymore. But yeah, it was it's pretty, you know, pretty nice stuff. I mean, the beaches and everything certainly, as you've probably been told, are incredible. But, you know, in the research I found, you know, she does go back to Ponce at some point in time, because that was probably, I guess, outside of San Juan, you know, the biggest city in Puerto Rico. So, you know, a lot of those people were there. And we did actually get to go to one of the plantations up on the mountains, coffee plantations that her grandfather owned. It's not working anymore. Because they don't, you know, that's the sad thing about Puerto Rico. I don't get it. I don't understand why, A, we never made it a state a long time ago, and B, why we don't, you know, why the states doesn't use it to build stuff, to do things. I mean, it's blows me away. It just
blows me
away.
Mean, there's so much there, and there's so much there to unpack. But I was just thinking as you were talking too, that one of the areas I like to think about and sort of explore in the research too, that I can't get over. And I know we're about to wrap up, but it's this idea of if you look at, you know, the travel and leisure, you know, all of these Lonely Planet, Puglia and Ponce and Puerto Rico are like the top destiny, you know, travel destinations, the most beautiful beaches in the world. And I think about our ancestors, La Miseria, and, you know, struggling, and like they were fleeing these places. And here we are generations later, you know, trying to make our way back, and they're kind of, you know, for a lot of people, they're out of reach, right? Like, we're talking about Puglia and Bari, you know, have become kind of like the influencer. You just see celebrities, you know, everything happening there. And it's just so interesting to me. And so, you know, it's all kind of cyclical and has a lot of relevance. But yeah, I can't wait to go to Bari. I definitely have to go to Puerto Rico. Otherwise, I'm getting my Puerto Rican card revoked at some point. I'm not even a New Yorker anymore, so I can't even say I'm a New Yorker. But yeah, this has been great, Bob. There's so much that, you know, I wish we could talk about. There's so much there.
We'll have when you come back, when you go to Puglia and you come back, we'll have to do another one.
Definitely.
Well, thanks again. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for having me.